Welcome to Advisor Go Radio. I'm Stephanie Sammons.
And I'm Zach Miller.
Well, today we are staring at a stock market that is not looking pretty, right, Zach?
It looks like 400 points down on the Dow today.
Yeah, and yesterday, what, we closed up over 400?
Yeah. The roller coaster.
It's a roller coaster. So let's see. Over the past week, what we've experienced a downgrade by the S&P. And Zach, what did the Fed decide to do?
I don't know.
I saw a blurb on it yesterday. Keep interest rates. They're vowing to keep interest rates low for the next 2 years or so.
Right, I guess people were expecting them to come in a little more aggressively.
Well, and today, you know, the sky is falling again. So as
tough time.
It is tough times. And I think we just can't go without acknowledging what financial advisors are going through right now. My gosh, you know, we've been beat up, it seems, so many times with, you know, the tech wreck in the early 2000s and then the financial debacle of 2008. And it seems like here we are again with just this extreme volatility and it almost looks like manipulation. It's just crazy, crazy stuff going on in the markets.
Yeah, what I'm hearing from clients is, you know, sort of a general malaise where they don't trust the system anymore. And, yeah, I think later on in this call we'll talk about pragmatic, actionable things that advisors can do to sort of get out in front of this thing to help them retain their clients. And in fact, as you mentioned before this call, you know, this is the time that books are made.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're trying to find an opportunity or a silver lining in this negative environment that we're in currently, we're going to try and give you some ideas to think about, because it is the time when books are built, client books are built, if you can get out there and take a stand and have an opinion and really try to be a thought leader and help people, because they're getting bombarded with just fear, 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 and negative information left and right, everywhere they turn.
So let's talk tech first. Let's anything interesting happen this week?
Okay, sounds good. Actually, I saw a couple of things. So, familiar with Foursquare?
Sure. You want to give a short intro?
Yeah, so it's a Foursquare, foursquare.com, is a location-based social network, so to speak. It's a check-in application. So it's one of those things where you can let your connections know where you are and what you're doing. And
so if I'm at the Dallas Hilton, I come and once I'm there, I get on the app and I say, hey, I'm here.
Yeah. And, you know, when I first heard about Foursquare, I was like, who is really going to take the time when they walk into a restaurant or something to click that they've checked in? But quite a few people are, to the tune of, I think, 10 to 15 million. So it's not huge, but it's gaining traction. And I think what's recently rolled out is interesting for financial advisors, because the one thing I like about Foursquare is it's location-based. And I think it's important for financial advisors to focus first on their geographical location and try to build their connections and build their trusted network offline and online in their location where they live and work.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, what Foursquare has announced is pages for companies and firms and practices. Beforehand, you know, you can set up a personal account, and you have to do that anyway if you want to set up a business page. But beforehand, you had to go through a very cumbersome process to get your business or your brand on Foursquare. And I should mention that many, many hundreds of major brands are on Foursquare, so they've adopted it. And that's why I think it will stick around and it will become more and more important to have a presence there. In addition, when you frequent a location in your market, so let's say that you do go out to dinner at a restaurant and you check in on Foursquare, you can syndicate that out to your Twitter followers and on Facebook, to your Facebook connections as well. And I've experimented with that some and have found that it gets engagement. So whenever I put out, hey, I'm at this restaurant or at this Starbucks, people tend to respond if they happen to be on Facebook or they happen to be listening. So I think that's kind of interesting.
I'm just trying to think of applications down the road where this may impact advisors.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, if they go in and build their company presence, so you have to have a company Twitter account first. So if my personal account is under Stephanie Sammons, then I can create my company page, Wired Advisor, only if I have a Twitter account that says Wired Advisor. So you have to have a Twitter. They're building it on top of Twitter, which is interesting. But I think there are some neat applications. I don't see clients checking into financial advisors' offices at all.
Right. They still want to be a little discreet, right?
Exactly. But there are some interesting applications, some neat things you can do around events. You know, if you have an event and you have everybody, you teach everybody how to check into the event. And if they do check in, then they get something or I've seen some neat marketing campaigns around events, and I'm not speaking intelligently about it because I can't think of any off the top of my head. But stuff like, you know, at the Morningstar Investor Conference, we did a Foursquare event over a 2-hour time period, and the 100th person to check into the event got a free iPad, for example.
That's great. And what it does is also engages everybody in the neighbor in that locale or in that neighborhood to sort of continue to help spread the word, right?
Exactly. Yes. And so then it gets the message out that all of these people are attending your event, because if they're syndicating it out to their Facebook friends, and their Facebook friends are going to see where they are and what they're doing. In addition, I think the way that we're going to use it as a company, so I've built a Wired Advisor page. I've got to have it, you know, designed and optimized. But we're going to put in, you can leave tips about anywhere you go and check into. And what we're going to do is leave tips about firms or financial advisors or financial practices, just general informational tips about those practices on our page. So that's something that I'm going to experiment with. I've seen it done before, and you know, it's just another way to give financial advisors exposure and visibility.
It'd be great, maybe, you know, if we could do follow you through that process, maybe in a later episode, hear how, you know, any feedback you've gotten from this process.
Yeah, definitely. You know, if you're at a restaurant and you leave a tip, it might be, hey, you really need to try the fried green tomatoes. Which is a Southern thing that I love. But for us, obviously, we're not going to leave tips like that. So I don't know. I'm still thinking about it, massaging it to determine how I'm going to use that opportunity. But it's just another way to build out your company's digital presence. And anything that you can go and create a company profile on is going to help your search results and your online reputation. So that's my take on it.
That's probably a good segue to talk about some of the information we've been reading coming out of Google's new social network, Google+.
Yeah, so what do you think of Google+? Have you spent much time on it?
So I did, and just, you know, before I dive in, I think there are already over 100 million users or something like that.
Yeah, fastest growing. I don't know if it's that high, but it's grown faster than any other social network.
There just seemed to be like sort of this pent-up demand for Google products, and people know how good the search engine works, whether you're an advertiser or you're searching for stuff. And I know I try almost everything that Google comes out with. So I did. I spent time building my profile. It takes a little understanding if you're used to Twitter or used to Facebook exactly what Google+ is. It's because it's a little bit of the same and a little bit different than all the other ones. But I think there is a lot of potential, and we're seeing this from some of the sort of professional internet marketers, to take their presences off some of the more generic networks like a Facebook network and build a Google Plus network and spend most of their activities marketing their presence there.
Yeah.
And that's because you can really define, it's much more push-based. You can really define who you want to push information to. You basically can hone a different message for different groups, which you don't really have the potential to do on some of the other networks. And so, like, I know on Facebook, my blogging activity gets sort of replicated there and gets pushed out there. But I also have friends on there, and everybody's sort of seeing the same message. And, you know, I don't really publish anything personal because I have clients on there also. So it's sort of a mess for me. And Google Plus allows me essentially to create different messages for different audiences.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, with Facebook in particular, you know, having a business page and having a personal page and really understanding who sees what and how to keep business and personal, it takes some studying. You know, it really does. Google Plus does make that a lot easier. And, you know, what else is cool about it is that your messaging can be longer than your Twitter message, which you're limited to 140 characters on Twitter, short and sweet. With Google, you're not limited. With Google Plus, I should say. And then it's like Facebook in that you can post rich media, you know, videos, images, links, really anything, and Google Plus will bring that in as a visual.
So have you sort of adopted the network yet, or are you starting to play around with it?
I'm definitely playing around with it. I'm watching the top dog internet marketers to see how they're using it, and they've obviously adopted it. They love it, so I think it's here to stay. Obviously, the numbers speak for themselves, but I still find it to be a little cumbersome in that the API has not been released yet, so it cannot be incorporated into my everyday social media management tools dashboard that I use to manage my presence. So I've got to go to a different browser and log into my personal Gmail account and, or just have a separate, sometimes I'll open an incognito window in the same browser that I'm in, which is just another way to create a wall between what you're doing in one screen and another screen. But I have to go back and forth, you know, and yeah. I'd really like what I post on Google Plus to also syndicate that out to Twitter, perhaps. But right now, that functionality is just not there.
And I would say that's probably the main reason why I don't find myself pushing a lot of information out on Google Plus. It's just another process to add to my day.
Right. Here, I do think it's important to have a presence there because it is Google, as you were saying earlier.
And it'll, as they integrate some of the activity there more into search results, you'll start to show up other places, right? So it's sort of important to make sure that at least your profile is really designed effectively.
Absolutely. You want to have a fully developed and complete profile there on Google Plus. And it's a personal profile. They're not allowing companies and brands to set up Google Plus profiles yet. So, you know, you can put obviously what you do and where you work and how to get in touch with you, but it's mainly personal use right now. So in search engine optimization, I think you've got to be there. It's going to be extremely important to getting found on Google, and it's going to incorporate the social graph, which is, you know, they're going to take into account who you're connected to and who your connections are connected to. So your ability to get found is really going to increase, I think.
Right. And I think with time, Google will make it easier to sort of incorporate using it into some of the other tools we have that we're using as well.
I agree.
I hope so.
Yep, I agree. What else? Something that came out this morning, and it's already literally the number one iPhone app. It's called Facebook Messenger. And Facebook Messenger, from what I can tell, I haven't downloaded it yet, is going to attempt to take over your typical text messaging functionality on your phone, on your smartphone. So it's apparently a quick way to message your connections, and it will come through over SMS or text.
That's great. And Facebook with their news stream, with the ability to, you know, they're attacking email as well. Yes. The difference between Facebook and Google is Facebook is a closed garden. All the activity that's happening within Facebook is in a closed environment, as opposed to some of the Google tools, which are sort of syndicated out to the greater web. But they're definitely making a gun for all of your communication, right?
They really are. They really are. I mean, is Facebook the future of the web is the question. But, you know, Google continues to come back. So I think maybe there's room for both.
Right. I'd like to hope, and you know, it's just a theory, but that openness wins over closed over the long term. I think that's good for businesses. That's good for the web in general. But you can't ignore what was the number you told me? 750 million users on active users on Facebook. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, over 50% of those users are on it every day. So you can't ignore that. And in the average age, I don't know what it is, but it has gone up. You know, my parents in their late 60s are on Facebook all the time. So it's, you know, I don't think you can make the argument anymore that it's just kids. It's really not. It's somewhere where you're going to have to also build a presence. I think you've got to be everywhere in the age of social media. You can't just really pick one.
You know? Particularly with wealth succession issues. I know I've spoken to a lot of advisors who complain that they can't necessarily talk to the children of their current clients, and that's a concern for them because they're not using the same tools. They're not using the same lingo even. So part of it's just the technology, getting familiar with this type of stuff, because this is how, you know, younger people, and we're seeing the ages creep up higher, as you're saying, that's how they're communicating.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because I don't know about you, but I rarely even leave voicemails or listen to voicemails anymore. One of my primary ways of communicating with even my own parents is text messaging. So I wonder, what about you?
This may sound bad, but I've just, given all the different things I'm working on. Obviously, when I have to speak to clients, you have to pick up the phone. But I've tried to move away from the phone in general. Calling. I don't like to be interrupted when I'm working on an activity for something that's outside of that. I want to control that environment, make sure I'm very productive. So I've been trying to move everything towards email, so that I can respond in turn, and I'm much quicker and more responsive over email than I am over the phone. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, obviously email is a big one, and the phone is still extremely important. But if you think about how important email is to communication today, and let's fast forward 5 years from now, or maybe even less time than that, if social media communication is adopted to the level that email has been adopted, that's going to be our primary way of getting in touch with people.
Yep, agreed.
You know, we have to meet the experiences and expectations of clients. And so we're going to have to meet them where they are. And I remember when, you know, nobody had email, and then all of a sudden your clients are contacting you via email. So it's just a matter of time, I think, before these new ways to communicate really infiltrate the business.
And I think the financial community has typically been a laggard just because of some of the compliance issues, but compliance will have to fall into line. I mean, if that's the way clients are demanding to be contacted, you know, we'll have to do it that way.
Yeah, I think compliance will, the regulatory environment will get better, but it'll take time. It always does.
For sure. So do you want to transition now to talking about some of the things we saw around the web, how advisors sort of taking advantage or addressing the current crisis?
Yeah, let's do that. I would like you to talk about your newsletter that you sent out this week, your Advisor Insider newsletter, where you talked about the client information diet. That really caught my eye, and I thought it was extremely interesting. And I happened to write a blog post myself about comforting clients during difficult times, and weaving in this idea of content development and creation and curation of content. So maybe you can start by telling us about what you meant by the client information diet.
Sure. I have a subscription newsletter on my website, New Rules of Investing. It's called the Advisor Insider, and it's free subscription right now. And I send out a weekly email to sort of help advisors use tips and technology, a lot of the similar things we're talking about on this podcast. And so the crux of this email was about helping advisors simplify their practice and helping them simplify the workflow of their clients. So one of the things I talked about, and I got this from Tim Sanders, who wrote the book Today We Are Rich. And he talks about an informational diet. And what happens a lot of times if people are left to their own devices is that they consume content wherever they can. Particularly clients are reading about, you know, the sky is falling, it's the end of the world. There's a proclivity to find negative information and be attracted towards it. So what I recommend to advisors is being very proactive during this environment to sort of define and to curate exactly what you want your clients reading. Push them out those articles. Call them on the phone and send emails, send newsletters, you know, do webinars where you're focusing them on the type of information that you feel is important for them, and don't leave them to their own devices, because left to their own devices, they're going to have a hard time. So whatever you can, whether it's writing, blogging, recording, even scheduling live events about this, you have to get out in front of them. And that's sort of the informational diet. It's helping to define it yourself.
Yeah, you know, it is so true, especially in this age of digital media, that clients are bombarded with information. And during stressful times, it's much of that is fear-based. And so you're competing with all of these other outlets to get your message out and to be the calm within the storm for your clients. And if you're not out there at least having a voice and an opinion and showcasing your thought leadership, then somebody else will be. You know, that's why we think, as we talked about earlier, gosh, it's a great opportunity to be a leader and at the same time, you know, gain visibility and attract prospective clients who aren't hearing from their advisor or who are not seeing their advisors put out relevant and soothing information that can help them stay on track.
Right. I mean, nothing replaces a phone call to a worried client, but you know, from the clients I've spoken to, both advisors and investors themselves, like even a mass message where you're sending out to your entire list, like they're reading that kind of stuff and they feel that that's a personal touch, and you can, If you don't do it, as you said, someone else will. So it's an incredible time to get out there and sort of just help them through this process. And whether they lose money or not, it's not the point. I mean, you obviously have to help on the financial side as well. But just being there along for that ride and communicating to them, that's what they're looking to an advisor for during this type of period.
Absolutely. You know, and if we go beyond the phone call, so that's a given. How can you expand your message above and beyond the phone call? And there are a handful of ways to do it in the age of social media. Obviously, having a presence on the major social media sites where you can send out messages and updates and insights about your thought leadership to help guide clients and prospective clients, that's one way to do it. Launching a blog and creating and showcasing your thought leadership there. Some of the clients that we work with have done a great job in the last couple of days of posting articles to their blogs that are very relevant and very helpful for staying the course and navigating what is going on in these markets. And in fact, one of them, I'm not going to mention his name because he probably wouldn't want me to, but he was contacted by a major online news publication in New York they wanted to come into his office and do a video of what he thought about the S&P downgrade. And so he got some incredible media exposure and got to put out a message that was very calming and helped consumers really understand what was going on. And all of that was most likely a result of him being visible and valuable through his blog. So I think that's pretty awesome.
That's a great point, because mainstream media doesn't know necessarily how to deal with this, you know, like the rest of us. So, I mean, they're reaching out to people they consider experts to help them make sense of it. So I've seen a variety of different people make it onto the Wall Street Journal, make it onto even some of the video that the Wall Street Journal is putting out. Josh Brown was on there the other day, who's an advisor in New York.
Yeah, I know who he is.
The reform broker.
Right.
You know, he works for Barry Ritholtz. Barry Ritholtz has been, you know, he was on Yahoo Finance homepage with some of the analysis that he's done recently. So the voices, the aggressive voices that are out there, have gotten a lot of prominence during this time period.
Yep, I agree. And again, it goes to, yes, you've got to be communicating with your existing clients, no doubt about it. But by putting your thought leadership out on a more grander scale and getting that exposure from being visible and valuable is going to help you build a book of business and attract other clients or prospective clients that may not have known about you otherwise. So it's just a really great opportunity to be seen right now.
It even helps to bolster the loyalty that an existing client may have, right? So an existing client is reading your stuff and that same material appears in the Wall Street Journal or appears on the New York Times, like, hey, that's my advisor that's up there. So, you know, he must have a credible voice to say it. It's sort of affirmation of that voice.
Right. And then the referability factor. I mean, how easy is it to share a piece of content? If a client sees your article on Facebook or reads it on your blog or receives it in their email inbox, it's simple for them to forward it to their friends. And I've seen that happen time and time again with advisors who are blogging.
It's one of the ways that they build
new relationships.
One piece, and we'll put this up on the blog that I read. It came out of Dorsey Wright's blog. They did a client sentiment survey that they did on. And this was actually right before sort of the big drops in the market. And you could just see the fear going up and up and up. They ask advisors basically to define or to qualify the fear level within their own client base, right? So they're asking advisors to describe that. Okay. And you could just see the fear going up and up and up and the need for advisors to get out in front of that. So they call that the fear spread.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So are they saying to get the heck out? I know Dorsey Wright is like a market timing newsletter kind of or a service.
They are market timing, but it's probably, you know, what the individual investors are doing is typically contrarian signs. So
right.
At the greatest fear, they're selling, and typically that might be a good time to buy. But that's not really the point. It was really just to help describe sort of the tangible feeling that's out in the marketplace, the psychology that's out in the marketplace. I found that useful.
I love it. I think that's great. Yeah, you know, this too shall pass. It always does, but each time, you know, it makes your job as a financial advisor more and more difficult. So the strong ones, the advisors who are out there communicating proactively are the ones who will survive, and that's always been the case, you know? Real quick, there's a financial advisor. His name is Bill Losey. He's a CFP. And I'll put a link to this in the show notes, but he's got a concept. It's called MyRetirementSuccess.com. And so yesterday, he's a blogger and he's done a lot of stuff with the media. He's clearly carved out a niche in that he focuses on retirement solutions. His tagline is invest smart, play hard, live long, which is trademarked.
I like it.
That's pretty cool.
I like
anyway,
it.
An example is what he put out yesterday on his blog was an article entitled A Time for Patience. And I think it's a great example of what we're talking about, where he just walks his followers, his clients and prospective clients through this process of what's happening, what we're seeing, why it's happening. In other words, he's taking a stand and having an opinion and putting out frequent information. He's also got tons of free guides, which I think is a great way for financial advisors to capture new leads, is to offer something of value that's free, you know, on your blog.
It's a great way to get email addresses.
It is. It's a great way to build connections and leads. So that's just an example of a financial advisor who's utilizing this as an opportunity to get out there and be a thought leader. And it
almost doesn't matter whether he's right. No one's going to call him 6 months from now and say, hey, you were the guy who, you know, gave, you know, somewhat shaky advice. I mean, they just the point, I think, is just to get out there and with a voice, any voice.
I agree. Yep, I agree. You know, so it's obviously tough times. Our call has actually run much longer than we normally would go on this podcast, but We acknowledge it's a difficult time, and it goes without saying that we want to talk about it. But at the same time, it's still so important during times like this to have a powerful digital presence and be accessible and be visible and valuable consistently, it's going to help you win new business and retain existing clients. There is just no doubt about it.
I couldn't have said that better. If we can help in any way, you know, please drop us a line. And you know, these are tough times. I think we'll make it through, but it's going to take some hard work.
Yeah, if you go to the AdvisorGo website, advisorgo.com, there is a contact form there on the site. And through that contact form, if you have questions or comments or topics that you'd like to hear about, please let us know and share that with us so that we can cover it on our show. We're happy to take your questions, and you know, eventually we'll probably add an 800 number to this as we grow the subscriber base, but we'd love to hear from you. So with that, I think we're out of here. Zach, you have anything else?
I think that's it. We'll catch you again next week. This is Zach Miller.
And this is Stephanie Sammons, AdvisorGo Radio.